Welcome to the Reading Room, the Diagnostic Imaging Podcast. I am Jeff Hall, the Senior Editor for Diagnostic Imaging. In the second part of a two-part podcast episode, we'll be discussing the recently published research in JAMA Internal Medicine, looking at projections of future radiation-induced cancers with computed tomography, or CT. I am pleased to be joined on this podcast episode by Dr. Mahadevappa Mahesh and Dr. Joseph Cavallo. Dr. Mahesh is the president of the American Association of Physicists in Medicine. He is a professor of radiology and radiological sciences at the Johns Hopkins School of Medicine. Dr. Cavallo is an assistant professor of radiology and biomedical imaging at the Yale School of Medicine. Now let's get to the questions for Dr. Mahesh and Dr. Cavallo. When there was a relatively recent issue with iodinated contrast media shortage, there was a fair amount of literature about imaging alternatives and use of lower dosing protocols. Is that prudence about necessary CT dosing still there, or do you think the pendulum has swung back a bit in the other direction?
I'll jump in here. I don't think there's the same urgency around lack of supply with in regards to the iodinated contrast, and that was driving a lot of those algorithms that were being put in place or restrictions on necessary imaging or urgent imaging. But it's always good to keep in place the information that you learn, or if you are able to discover ways to improve your quality when you go through these exercises. And so I would encourage places that have adopted ways to, limit unnecessary exposures to keep those in place where appropriate. It always comes back to the risk versus benefit for the patient. And whether it's related to contrast shortage or just trying to minimize overall radiation dose, as Mahesh alluded to, we have the ACR has been in the fo on the forefront of radiation dosage limitations for a while with their Image Gently and Image Wisely campaigns. A lot of academic medical centers and many other radiology practices employ physicists who spend a lot of time and effort to minimize the amount of dose while keeping our diagnostic images of great quality. And so that's all really worthwhile work to continue moving forward.
I agree. Just to add on to Dr. Kavala's point, I think this iodine contrast shortage happened during the COVID time, and there is a supply and demand, and people try to run around. And in fact, I think some of the clinic adopted single-use iodine contrast, exact amount rather than wasting in the bottle. All those things. Those are all good things which need to continue. In fact, today morning we had a meeting about the impact on the iodine contrast with the upcoming tariff. That is going to have some impact because a lot of iodine contrast comes from outside, from China and other places. So probably that's going to increase the cost of it. So people again will going to ration it and fund it. And once they find it appropriate, they don't need to go back to the full dose if it can answer the question. They should not be. With regard to ACR or the ACR or anywhere, we have already been always stressing like it's a teamwork between the radiologist, imaging providers, plus the medical physicist and the technologist as a working team. And we routinely do optimal dose optimization and ACR as a dose index registered for the dose to provide all these things. So iodine contrast, this is almost similar to helium shortage in MRI. And also technetium-99m shortage in nuclear medicine. In fact, that led to the US physician going to Congress, and Congress invested money to open our own US-made technetium-99. In fact, through centers are coming up online pretty soon. So these are geopolitical consideration which will have impact. But I think that will draw our attention and think this is nothing to do with the generally with radiation dose, but if we can live lesser, why not? And if it and answer the right question, that is even good.
What are your thoughts about the use of AI to bolster diagnostic capability with CT and facilitate lower radiation dosing? What trends are you seeing?
No, there are two things I want to separate. Two things. One is AI. Right now, as you know, there are 1,000 study, 1,000 program approved by FDA. About 80% and 90% is in radiology, but none of them for diagnosis. It's only for workflow related and optimization. That is already entering the field. How to workflow? I think Dr. Kavala will talk more about that part. With respect to AI being used for radiation dose reduction, there is some effort going on. In fact, a lot of the image reconstruction, which we used to call iterative reconstruction, they have now moved into deep learning reconstruction. Means already being used, some vendors are utilizing this opportunity to use, so that will allow user to acquire the data at a very low radiation dose and improve the image noise over the period with the deep learning. However, the caution what we in the field tell is like, we can only reduce the dose to some level. You can't unilaterally go down, and you cannot get a CT image without an X-ray, let's be frank. So if I go too low in the dose and trying to reconstruct using deep algorithm or AI model, there is a chances of this putting artificially low contrast object in the study, in the liver and other area. And this has been documented very nicely in some of the publication. So there should be a balance. And to do the balance, I think the AI users need to be aware of the quality control on this AI. And that's one of the things which we are working on, how best we can do the quality control on this AI. But it's already in. We can do even further. In addition, the new CT technologies are going to enhance even further dose reduction. Probably you heard about the photon counting CT. Right now, photon counting CT is very expensive. And right now, it's only by one vendor. I'm more interested when other vendors also enter the field and how it play out. The other vendors are in the verge of getting FDA approval. The technological advances of photon counting will allow to reduce dose even further, what we are currently doing. Because if you go too low in the current detectors, it will create what is called as electronic noise will dominate, and you cannot correct that. With the photon counting detectors, you can eliminate the electronic noise completely. Thereby, you can go even one fourth level lower. And also, you can make even thinner detectors so that you will not only enhance spatial resolution, but you also dose optimize. So these are coming, and it's already there with one when the other vendors are going to come. So these technological advances is remarkably changing the radiation doses.
I think that was a great answer. I don't have a lot to add there. I would just stress, the importance of funding this ongoing research. Whether it's the photon counting CT machines or AI post-processing algorithms, there are multiple avenues to lower dose, right? It's not going to be a one size fits all or a silver bullet. It's going to be a combination of different technologies on the machine side, on the software side, that help us to continually make these examinations safer and improve the risk-benefit profile moving forward.
What are your thoughts about dose reduction with cardiac CT?
I am heavily involved with cardiac CT with at Hopkins. We do a lot of, from the developmental stage, we have done. From the day one, I was involved with the cardiology and radiology to develop the cardiac CT. This is how we were doing cardiac CT when we began. Retrospectively gated helical scan, 10 to 15 millisievert was very common. Then we did what called tube current modulation. It dropped down to 7 to 10 millisievert. Immediately within 1 or 2 years, we started doing prospectively triggering method, which further reduced to down. Now, these days, with a wide detector like a 320 detector or a dual source CT, we can do cardiac CT angiography at this level. This is, you're talking about 10 millisievert to 1 millisievert, 10 times dose reduction. This is actually, in my experience, one of the fastest technological advantage in the way we do the things as going down. This needs to be encouraged and show to the people now. And that has been a, I saw this to be a very remarkable in my time, and within 10, 15 years, we were able to do it with such a low dose, almost same as a calcium scoring. And this has changed the whole way of cardiac CT. The cardiologists are treating their patient, and now they are comfortable doing in the emergency room also cardiac CT angiography. So I just wanted to share that advantage.
One thing to quickly add, since you brought up cardiac CT, in now we have AI programs that can extract information out of CTs that were done for other indications, and prevent the need for even getting a CT in some places, right? If a patient came in with a trauma, and we did a chest CT to look for any acute injuries, we also captured data about their heart. Previously, it would have been very difficult to make any quantitative assessment of their coronary artery calcifications. And now we have algorithms that can look at non-gated, non-contrast enhanced chest CTs and give a fairly accurate assessment of a cardiac risk stratification. And that's a case where, maybe a decade ago, that patient would have been screened by their primary care physician and would have went for an entirely separate chest CT to get additional information that now can be gleaned from another study.
Based on your experience, as well as the findings in the aforementioned risk modeling study, what key takeaway or takeaways would you express to the public as well as radiologists with respect to the risks of CT?
First and foremost, I would ask as a patient, like, is this CT necessary for me? And the patient should have a history of what are the CTs they had done or the exam they had done. And they should bring that up to the physician. I had these things. Do I need this extra? Just by asking that question, a lot of the low-hanging fruit can be solved. And if the physicians say yes, then the next question is like, is this particular CT done in a place which has some type of a quality control? Our accreditation means it has met some minimum standards of how to do the CTs.
Yeah, I think your first point is great. Unfortunately, information and image sharing in this country is still rather disjointed, even though it has improved over the past few years. I often see many studies that are done that could have been prevented if the patient had access to even just their report from prior imaging. And now with the proliferation of mobile devices and smartphones, it's not uncommon for people to be able to pull up reports from other institutions that can really aid. I'll use kidney stones, for example, right? If a physician is worried about kidney stones, but a patient had a CT 4 months ago or 3 months ago and they had no renal stones, the odds that they've developed a sizable stone and it is now obstructing or causing an obstructive uropathy in that short a time period is on the lower end of probable, right? And so that's a case where maybe an ultrasound could suffice. And there are lots of examples of that in the emergency room. And I would just encourage the patients to remember that it is a and the physicians that this is a team game, right? We're all trying to work together to get the best care to the patient at the least amount of radiation. And sometimes that ends up with the emergency radiologist or someone in the radiology department recommending a different study. And it's important to have those conversations when we raise a possible objection to what was ordered. It's not because we're trying to overrule the physician or we're disagreeing with their care. It's because we have a unique expertise in what these specific studies are intended to show and how one study may be slightly better than the other and it could even give you the answer in a way that doesn't require radiation.
And I add to that point because generally, emergency room physicians get the bad rap telling like they're ordering too many studies. I go against it. It's like not necessarily. If we look in closely, emergency room physicians, radiology, everybody are working in such a time compressed timeline, and they're trying to save the patient. And if this can answer quickly, their hands should not be tied because of the radiation. As a medical physicist, I am all for radiation dose reduction, but at the same time, I am also a proponent of never tie anybody's hand because of radiation. Even in the cath lab, if we had to do the procedure, do it. Let's worry about that. Like, what are the things we can do as a medical physicist in a team? Optimizing the detector, optimizing the protocol. But let's not hand tie the physician of ordering the study because, as he said, there may be another variation of a particular scan. That may end up giving a better answer for a better treatment. I think that needs to be highlighted than simply telling, like, oh my, we ordered too many CTs as a joke, like, okay, we do everybody a CT. Probably it may, one of my previous chair is to tell, like, probably in a way, it's in a better way, but like instead of a security scanner in front of the emergency room, we can just have a CT scanner, everybody to get a whole body CT. ideally, in the sense, like what I meant is like that is the level of the advances of CT has happened now. In fact, now we are study seeing is like in the children, for example, we used to do a skeletal X-ray survey scans for skeletal X-rays, and now they're finding that to be of low value compared. They can do a whole body CT of that particular kid and answer a lot of the questions. So what I meant to say is like these things are becoming very important, what it can provide. And rather than talking about this, what it can cause damage, which is a hypothetical statistical model, we also need to emphasize what can be done, even further improving this justification and optimization and also education. I think I would stress that part, and that's what we are trying to do.
Is there anything else you wanted to add about the study and about CT safety in general?
I think it's important for radiologists to have a good understanding of radiation, of the potential risks, of the relative exposure rates in relation to things that a patient has more experience with or can understand. Baseline radiation rates, cross-country flights. Sometimes it helps to be able to explain these studies in those terms to patients to help alleviate their fears or help. Put what can, in some cases be seen as a magical technology into more realistic terms that a patient can understand. And as the radiologist, you are the radiation expert on the care team for the patient at a given time. And it's important to be able to have those conversations and have them in a frank and honest way, and then let the patient make their decision about or make let the patient make a well-informed decision, I should say, about how to proceed with their care in conjunction with their other care team members.
I just want to add a few things. As a medical physicist, I just want the radiology community to recognize who their medical physicist is. Do they work with a medical physicist? Do they know who to contact if they have a question? Because we in a medical physics world are ready to help anybody to provide this opportunity. If they don't have a local one, we will find the answer. During my experience at Hopkins, I talk to patients because my radiologist, instead of them talking directly, they'll send the patient to me. And this has given me a great opportunity to provide them different perspective, as he said, and try to help them understand what the numbers are. We tell our technologists, if they ask, don't give any one number. Let us talk, come and talk to them. What does it mean? Natural background radiation is 3 millisievert here. If you go to Denver, it is even more higher. Or if you're flying is higher, or you do some other task is higher. In addition, we also tell, like, what's the risk of you driving on a highway? What is the mortality risk you talk about? But you still come because you want to benefit of this driving faster, coming quicker. Similarly, you should think if the benefit, if the doctors say the CT is necessary, the benefit should be far outweighing any of the associated risk. The other thing which I also want to stress to the community is, like, generally people take, why not to do MRI? MRI has its own hindrances. Its own, because it's not only a lengthy procedure, there is also gadolinium contrast indication. More than that, for me personally, in the US, the copay paid for the patient for MRI is higher than the copay they pay for a CT or X-ray. So if you blanketly send patient to MRI, some of these patients will not come back for a repeat MRI because their copay will be $200 to $300, depending on their insurance. So that also, that economical aspect also had to be put into this equation. People will say, why not do ultrasound? Ideally, it's true, but how many times you can find ultrasound technologies in the middle of the night in the emergency room to do an abdominal ultrasound? So idealistically, and we have to look at idealistically and also pragmatically. So my point is basically the same thing. It's like we need to stress this, and it's not a gone away point. It's need to be educated on a routine basis, both our radiologists and to our users, and provide a well-balanced answer. So that is the best way. Because a few years ago, one of the patient called me. She was actually from Florida. Like, I heard Hopkins has a very low dose scanner. I want to come and get a calcium scoring. I told, like, there is no need to come for Hopkins all the way from Florida, spending money to get a calcium scoring. You can go to this Florida hospital, ask these 5 questions, and you should be. I think that should be the thing. Is like, we should be able to communicate and share our knowledge and help our patients.
I'd like to thank Dr. Mahesh and Dr. Cavallo for sharing their insights on this topic. I would also like to thank the listeners for joining us in the Reading Room, the Diagnostic Imaging Podcast. As always, visit diagnosticimaging.com for the latest news and perspectives in radiology.